Welcome, everyone, to the Friday night public discussion group of Perfecting Horizons Institute. We are on paper 43, section 9, which is on old single column, page number 495. All right, now before we start up on this last section, you see the title is Citizenship on Edentia. Let's just go back for a moment and reflect on just prior to this in the previous section. They mentioned citizenship on Gerasim. So this contrast at these first two levels in the local universe, of working on the lowest level, at the local system level, working your way through the mansion worlds, and then getting to citizenship on the headquarters world on Gerasim. We just finished in the last section working our way through all of the satellite and sub-satellite worlds at the constellation level, and we're ready to go to the headquarters world of Edentia. So let's think about that parallel. So if in the previous section, the fourth paragraph of that section, and so if you're in the old single column, just that third full paragraph down on the previous page, let me just read that little preface before they go into that list that we went through last time of those seven items, the details about that whole educational regimen at the constellation level and all those 770 worlds, remember? Okay, so it says, on the mansion worlds, you completed the unification of the evolving mortal personality. On the system capital, you attained Gerasim citizenship and achieved the willingness to submit the self to the disciplines of group activities and coordinated undertakings. But now, on the constellation training worlds, you are to achieve the real socialization of your evolving Marantia personality. Okay, so like I said, let's think about the parallel. Okay, so like they mentioned there, see, on the mansion worlds, you completed the unification of the evolving mortal personality. Remember, the three levels, both in the local universe and then subsequently in the super universe. You have those three levels, beginning with individuality, and moving up to associativity, and then culminating in unity. All right, so when they talk about on the mansion worlds, you've completed that initial, in the case of the local universe, Marantia, individualization. You completed the unification of the evolving mortal personality. You have a fully individuated Marantia self that is encompassed by your personality. So when you've completed a stage like that, what do? Notice what they say next. So after the mansion worlds, where you were completing like that, on the system capital, you attained Gerasim citizenship and achieved the willingness. Okay, just start with that much. All right. So you're talking about a new consecration of the will. We've talked about this many times. This is a great context for noticing how they specifically remind you of the proper order to think about in general the consecration in this twofold consecration. Before you go about definitively consecrating your will, you should make sure that you've completed, at some level, the consecration of your mind. So that when you definitively consecrate your will in a certain direction, in a certain way, you have a whole that is being willed and not a part, not an incomplete. Right, I mean, that's what I'm going to get at. You don't really want to think about them so much together. Think about the consecration of the will. You know, who allowed you? You know, who gave you the ability to consecrate your will? The Universal Father gave you your personality, which has that ability to will yourself. Right. Is the Father the means for completing? No. The Father is the initiator. Your relationship to the Father is an initiating relationship. To use what the Father gives you is to initiate something, not to complete something, not to work through the process of something, to initiate something. Right? So, we start out here, you know, roughly age 6, our personality begins to manifest through ourself. And at some point, early on, we need to exercise that will. We need to, as wholeheartedly as we can, consecrate ourselves to start at the very beginning of eternity. You definitively consecrate your will to that goal of striving towards eternity. You've initiated the initial stage. Now you need to fill out what you've initiated. And that's what you do in your first world and through the mansion worlds of your local system. And you reach a completion of an individuation. You know, and so that completion of that Marantia individuation, you know, it's like, well, I'm a material identity right now. You know, so isn't there a previous stage that I went through? No. I mean, your Marantia identity is, by and large, a scaffolding phenomenon. You're initiating your Marantia individualization here with your soul. Right? The whole point is to get that Marantia individuality started. We all can get it started by grace because we have the universal bestowal of thought adjusters now. So everyone gets a soul initiated by grace. If it wasn't the case, you know, we would be very much in this life if we didn't get an adjuster at roughly age 6. You know, very much we're trying to get to the point where we genuinely initiate relative to eternity. You know, if I don't get an adjuster in my mortal life, I don't go on. You know, if I don't get it by grace, you know, I've got to get up to third circle or some equivalent. Right, to really initiate. It's there's an actuality to our initiation, but not a reality to it. You know, there's not a direct connection to eternity until there's a soul. That's a potentially immortal self. Whereas no matter how primitive or how advanced the world is, a mortal self is just a mortal self, and it doesn't connect to eternity. It's mortal. Yeah?
So does will, in this case, have anything to do with choice?
Right. So that distinction between the decisions that you make, which are related to time, and your mindal self makes decisions, but as a personality, you can make a choice. You can go above temporal issues. You know, a genuine choice is not about anything temporal. Those are decisions, or even anything spatial, qualified spatially. Those are decisions. Choices are related to infinity and eternity. You know, a genuine choice. The simplest example is the one I always give. Choose this day whom you will serve. As for me, I will serve the Lord. Is that about a certain city on the planet? You know, a certain day of the week? No, has nothing to do with space and time. You're just choosing to serve the Lord, period, for all eternity, end of story. Right? And everything, every decision you make subsequent to that choice is predicated on that choice. That everything in time is predicated on that consecration to eternity. And those on high who know the difference definitively between decisions and choices, that's what they're looking for in you. Decisions, okay, decisions are fine, but they're looking for a moral choice. Right? They're looking for that choosing to transcend the temporal. Yeah?
Well, just another example would be, I wish to be trustworthy. Nothing to do with today or tomorrow.
Right. And can you take that spiritual, initial religious impulse, primitive spiritual consciousness wish, can you realityize it? Can you take it up from the lower domain of the hourglass as a wish into the upper domain as a realityized choice? Really choose. You know, they're not looking for your delusional choices. They're looking for your real choices, not things that you falsely call choices. They're looking for something that really is a choice. You know, and we don't have any control over what is a choice and what's not. It either is or it isn't. It's just an existential fact. They're looking for you to really use your personality, not just an aggrandized self, but to really use your personality to take that wish up and connect it to eternity. Okay, so you make that initial exercise of your will, you know, an initial consecration. It can't help but be small. We're so small to begin with, right? But it's enough to carry you forward all the way to Gerizim. That faint little flicker of faith, choice. Right. And you've supplied the favorable conditions throughout that whole journey in your initial mortal world and through the mansion worlds. You've supplied the favorable conditions and you've been grown. Grown to an initial stage of completion. Okay? You're completely individuated as a Marantia individual. Right? And now what? Well, now you have... supplied the favorable conditions to give yourself a new level of consecration, a new level of consecration of will. Right, and so that's what they're talking about here, because and that's a stable, appropriate thing to do because you completed the unification. All right, so now So we're gonna really definitively exercise our will. We're gonna initiate again. Okay, and look what it is: the willingness to submit the self to the disciplines of group activities and coordinated undertakings. Okay, think about what all is going on that local system. Headquarters level. Is it just ascenders who are working on this issue of to submit the self to the disciplines of group activities and coordinated undertakings? No. Lenon and Dex on the system capital are doing the exact same thing. Right? Did Lucifer succeed in that willingness to submit the self to the disciplines of group activities and coordinated undertakings? No, Lucifer did not. What was the battle cry of the Lucifer rebellion?
Self-assertion.
Self-assertion. Right? Not the willingness to submit the self. Right? So you've gotten up to Lucifer's eye level, to the system sovereign's eye level when you get to Gerizim. The two of you are working on the exact same thing on Gerizim, working on that definitive consecration of the will, a willingness to submit the self to the disciplines of group activities and coordinated undertakings. And you notice it's coordinated undertakings, like we talked about last time. It's not, when you're doing all that stuff on the constellation worlds, it's not about this relationship and then another one and then another one and then another one. It's not about adding a bunch of relationships together, one to one. It's about connecting into the cosmic system. It's about becoming an individual member in the cosmic system, coordinated, right? In relation to the whole and through the individuality of the whole, you know, that relationship to the mother. Right? So you make that definitive consecration of the will. And when they see it's occurred, that you are consecrated in that way, you know, that you're literally being tested, examined, measured to whether or not this is actually there, this consecration. And if it is, then you're graduated off of Gerizim and you go to the constellation. Okay, and so just like they say, you know, but now on the constellation training worlds, you are to achieve the real socialization of your evolving Marantia personality. So like we talked... Oh, that's the fourth paragraph of section 8. Right above the list.
I never
would have found this. Right, so the real socialization of your evolving Marantia personality, like we were talking about, you know, so much last time, you know, that's the associativity level, that socialization, is all that we, but, you know, it's all being done, just like they said in the previous one, the unification of the evolving mortal personality. Right, here you can see the real socialization, you know, not just the actual, but, you know, you're developing all of this nature up to a completed state. You complete the socialization through that vast, elaborate process. You complete the socialization of that Marantia individual. And then you're graduated to the capital of Edentia. So, you know, in parallel, you know what's got to be happiness. There must be time for a new consecration of the will to initiate the next stage. You see why they, you know, why so often in the book they talk about it. You want to think in levels, right? They keep using that analogy over and over and over and over again in various ways to think about things in levels, right? You initiate yourself into a new level, and then you complete that level. And then you initiate yourself to the next level, and you complete that level. That's the way you use. So, and what is that whole completion? It's all about the consecration of your mind to the universal harmony of God the Mother. That's how you get completed on each level. The Father initiates you into that new level, and then the Mother provides the way. He's the will. She's the way. She provides the way, and your consecration to her, that's supplying the favorable conditions. She grows you to completion. That's the process. And so she's just grown you to completion again on the next level.
So, you know, listening to you talk about this, it sounds like this is going to be a challenge for me, which is fine. I'm open to it.
Join the family.
But, you know, I also remember that planets, you know, once they reach a certain stage of light and life, the beings on those planets, you know, get to the stage where they are, you know, even Edentia eyes. In other words, they're that far advanced.
Right.
And even so, this is something that you can really perceive from a human level, that, because at some point, you know, human beings achieve this on their nativity world or a lot close to it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, everything except, okay, so for those of you in the webinar, if you couldn't hear that, I mean, about how you can achieve a lot of what we're talking about here on worlds that are advanced, you know, especially if they're well into light and life. You know, and yes, you know, except for being able to go back and teach, you know, which of course, you know, so, you know, let's say you're graduated all the way to Edentia off of your initial world. You know, and then you go back and teach, because you couldn't go back and teach when you're on your initial world, so that's the one thing you couldn't do. But now in terms of, is, you know, something that we can visualize to some degree in this life, because they do it in a mortal life and, you know, in the future, well, yes and no. Remember, none of us can even imagine a world in a post-bestowal stage, you know, in a normal you know, post-bestowal age. So, you know, obviously the answer is yes and no about whether or not, you know, you can really extrapolate something on this world and get some sense of what's going on in the constellation worlds.
Okay. The reason I ask that is because, you know, they tell us all about this.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, our mind doesn't go with us. So, you know, certain things we learn, et cetera, of spiritual value, you wonder, you know, do you remember all this or don't you remember all this as you move forward?
There,
those are kinds of things I'm wondering. So the point of telling us this is to try and help guide us more in those directions, I would say, while we're here, if possible.
Again, you know, when you said that about your mind doesn't go with you, remember what I said about what's really being initiated here. Is it your agitant mindal self? No. What's really being initiated here is your Marantia mindal self. That mind does go with you, you know, so to speak. I mean, you know, right now there's Marantia mind seated on your soul. Right, that Marantia mindal self is making decisions right now. None of us are even remotely aware of the decisions that self is making right now. That self can't make choices like your mortal self can, but it's making decisions right now. It's making all kinds of decisions relative to its experience with the Holy Spirit, the Spirit of Truth, the Thought Adjuster. It's making all kinds of decisions about that right now.
That we're not conscious
of. That you're not conscious of.
Really?
Yes. And that mortal self is what's, or that Marantia self is what's resurrected, right? That, you know, so right now there's certain mind, and you know, with certain forms in it that are seated on that soul, okay? That's deanimated for a while, but then you're, you know, repersonalized. That Marantia mind reseats on that soul, you know, it circulates through the patterns of that Marantia structure, that Marantia mind energy, and re-consciousizes all of the thoughts that were in that Marantia mind when it was turned off.
Even though we have no consciousness of it, we somehow affect it, or have,
I mean,
who we are.
You are making choices to foster or thwart its progress, right? And if you produce a copyable form in the upper domain of your hourglass, you know, a form that conforms to the cosmos, that form is copied into your soul, right? So that thought that you have, you know, in the upper domain of your hourglass, in your person, you know, in your spiritualized mind, that personalized self has, you know, that thought gets copied, you know, that soul's thought is your thought. At least, you know, in an initiating sense. But, you know, but it now, you know, is in a much more intimate relationship with spirit realities than you are as a mortal self. And, you know, it can begin to work on what you initiated, even though you're not aware of it. You know, see, that's the thing that's really, you know, it's amazing about what the Arantia book is teaching us, you know, that there's three selves in play right now. There's the adjuster self. There's your potentially immortal self, and then there's your mortal self. Okay? And the real you, you know, in terms of potential relationship to eternity, is that Marantia self and what it's up to right now. And as long as your higher mind is making every effort right now to have a positive relationship to eternity, you can be guaranteed that Marantia version of you is making progress, slow but sure. However, since you have the ability to determine what's going on with those decisions, to, you know, because you have powers of choice that it doesn't have, if you choose to start a negative relationship to eternity, it is forced to work in that new environment. You know, you put a form in the upper domain of your hourglass that's consecrated to eternity in a negative way. The adjuster is always subservient to your will. It copies that into your soul, that negative relationship to eternity. And now, you know, all the decisions that soul is making are now clouded and twisted by what you just chose as a mortal. Okay? You know, and if you're amazingly adept at this, you can choose and choose and choose in a negative way. You might actually get to the point where that little embryonic soul that's trying to make little child decisions gets so twisted, you know, that it becomes completely emptied and evacuated, and, you know, and you've committed cosmic suicide, right? You know, so think about, you know, you've got this, you know, little baby version, Marantia version of yourself that's a helpless victim to your choices, right? It has no choice in the matter like you do. It is forced to be subject to whatever you choose. You know, and if you choose to destroy that little baby Marantia self, then that baby Marantia self is destroyed. And it can't exercise its will against you. It can't, you know, it's a victim to your misguided will. all right, so now back to...
Chris?
Yeah.
Real quick, to me, the amazing thing is that our soul that is in the process of developing is our Marantia self. That is us.
Right, it's the real you.
That's what goes on. Yeah. It's the Marantia. That's us.
Yeah. Right. You know, you'll wake up with, you know, with a consciousness, you know, that's now has personality identified with it, and you won't say, well, you know, what's this mind? What are these thoughts? You know, you'll go, oh, wow, this is all of my better thoughts. all those baggage thoughts that I spent my whole mortal life struggling with, they're all gone. Hallelujah. Right? No longer do perforce I serve two masters. I don't have all of that baggage of the divots in my DNA that my agitated mind conformed to, you know, and was constantly stuck in eddies because of. Right? That all goes away, you know, and you finally are set free to start to really sail on the cosmos. Without all of that baggage. Is there something that, yeah?
Chris, David has a question.
Mm-hmm.
What are the probabilities that in the Marantia worlds we will have the company of the great villains of history?
Speak a little louder. I can't hear that. Speak a little louder.
Should I start from
there? Yeah, yeah.
Okay. What are the probabilities that on the Marantia worlds we will have the company of the great villains of history?
See, I don't want to get. You know, we always get way off on that tangent for a long time. Every time this comes up,
I don't want to bother.
But you know, remember. I mean, just to, you know, speak. Think about what I just said. The great villains of history. You're thinking about mortal selves. Are any of those mortal self villains resurrected? No. Not even Jesus' mortal self was resurrected. I mean, if not even Jesus' mortal self was resurrected, is Hitler's mortal self going to be resurrected? No. No mortal selves are resurrected. Right? The question is, what was the potentially immortal self of Hitler like? He didn't know. None of us know. Did he actually rise to the level of exercising his personality, you know, and corrupting that little soul that he was given by grace by God? He had an adjuster.
Judge not.
Okay. He may not even remotely have touched it. I mean, you know, if you're very animalistic and debased, you're not doing anything really personal, and so you can't really affect your soul in a positive or a negative way. Maybe that soul woke up and for the first time it was free from the bondage it had been in, you know, of not being able to go anywhere except be, you know, just that little embryonic self that was put there by grace, you know, and it waited the whole mortal life of Hitler for something to be added, and nothing was ever added, you know, and so it's just this little single-celled soul.
And his name was Eschewed.
Right. Right, or Judas, you know, or whoever, right. I mean, Judas is, you know, people say, well, what about Hitler and what about Judas? So those are two they always bring up. No one can think of anything besides Hitler and Judas, right? You know, and again, I'll just remind you, there's proof that Judas was not iniquitous when he hung himself, because he hung himself, right? If he was iniquitous, he wouldn't have felt that anguish. That was the conflict between his recognition of ideals and his actions. And he was so distraught by it, he committed suicide. That's proof that he still has encircled in the Holy Spirit. He still has his adjuster. He still has a soul.
He won't be very popular.
No iniquitous beings commit suicide. That's why there's executioners. In the sense we think of suicide, yes, they commit cosmic suicide. They choose to unplug themselves from the cosmos definitively. They're not a person anymore. But when we say suicide, we're thinking of stopping the animation of our body and all this. Okay, no. None of those beings like Lucifer are actually going to unravel their body or something. That has to be done by an executioner, right? Okay. All right. So back to the details here. Just remember, you'll be waking up with a better everyone there. Okay. The question for you is not who you're going to wake up with, but can you believe in a God who could love us that much? Can you believe in a God that would resurrect Judas's little embryonic soul? Or do you not want a God like that? Do you want a vengeful God that would snuff out his little child for being ignorant? Is that the God you want? Okay, and why do you want that God? You need to ask yourself that question. Okay. Problem's not Judas there.
They should have asked that.
Judas, when they say that those ascenders continue to have problems, there has to be a Judas there, right? The problem is the people who can't be objective enough to deal with the existence of Judas. Right? All right. Okay, so now back to this. So you've completed this real socialization, like they were saying there. Okay? And you're graduated to Audentia. See? And so the question we want to figure out is, what is this new consecration of the will that you're going to be doing there on this second capital world? Okay, so let's start reading here.
Section 9. Citizenship on Audentia. After graduation from world number 70, ascending mortals take up residence on Audentia. Ascenders now, for the first time, attend the assemblies of paradise and hear the story of their far-flung career as it is depicted by the faithful of days, the first of the Supreme Trinity origin personalities they have met.
Okay, so you notice that little first paragraph is set apart by itself, right? Okay, because they want you to, get yourself off to the correct start, like we were just, setting up. Spent half an hour setting up. Right? All right. Okay. So we already know basically what has to be next. I'm going to initiate my relationship to the next level. You're going to be going up to the local universe headquarters level. And what level is that? We did individuality, we did associativity, that's going to be unity. Notice what they're bringing in, though. When you get to Audentia, do they just set your sights on that initial kind of lowest level unity ceiling of the local universe headquarters? No. Do they set it on the unity level of Uversa, super universe headquarters? No. They set your sights all the way to Havona. Remember the key thing about Havona. Back when we read about Havona, that's when your definitive spiritual growth begins. You're just working up to that. You have downstepped expressions, individuations of spirit unity prior to that. You've got the full-on direct unity when you get to Havona. So that's what, you know, why they, you know, make that comment. Why did they bring back the Mount Assembly and the Faithful of Days, like we, you know, read about a few sections back, you know, that quote-unquote Assembly is a paradise, like we said, they're playing off of Isaiah there. Right, so for the first time, to hear the story of their far-flung career as it is depicted by the Faithful of Days. Right? You can see what they're trying to get you to focus on this next consecration of the will. And you know, just another reminder about how will is this consecration of will is an initiation step. And each time you're initiating definitively, you're setting your sights farther and farther away from the immediate time and space. Right? You're setting your sights, lifting your eyes up higher and higher. You're setting your sights more and more, literally towards eternity and infinity. Yeah?
You know, maybe I'm wrong, but I find that Revelation does that a little bit. I mean, when you read the whole story of your whole career, your sights kind of get set that way.
Right.
Towards paradise, towards the core finality, towards even what that might have in the future. I mean, that whole thing, your sights are kind of... You know what I'm saying?
Right. So, you know, like Philip Newman saying, yeah, I mean, it seems like the Revelation is doing that very thing of helping you to get your sights set on eternity, infinity. Yeah. I mean, they're trying to help us to really initiate, to get some sort of a concept of eternity, infinity that has some measure of reality to it, that isn't so primitive and only related to infinity and eternity by the thinnest thread of truth, to get you more definitively, literally, factually setting your sights. You know, instead of, well, okay, worshiping a pretty rock, I guess we can do something with that. You know, you're not in those primitive modes anymore. Your God doesn't fit in a burning bush anymore. Right? You've begun to actually contemplate infinity. The word infinity is only in the dictionary because we're persons. Right? If we didn't have personality, that word wouldn't be in there. There would only be finity. There wouldn't be not infinity. Now, you notice it's a pretty tentative relationship that what we call that, yeah, we literally call it not finity, infinity. Right? We don't have a very direct concept of what it literally is, but we know there's something that finity isn't. Right.
Fine.
Right. We know there's something that goes beyond the finite, and we know our real concept of God doesn't fit in the finite. We need a place for God to fit, something that's not finite, not finity. Right. All right. So, see, for the first time. The Constellation Headquarters world, you're going to be having this new consecration of your will to, you know, to directly to the issue of unity. You're going to begin to try to take on a more direct relationship with unity. Okay, and remember what they said about the previous one: the willingness to submit the self to the disciplines. Okay. Yeah. What followed was about the constellation level, but you know, you can complete it for any level. You're going to submit yourself to disciplines again. We have no idea what discipline means until we have to have the kind of self-control, the kind of discipline to directly put ourselves in relationship to unity. Remember how we've talked about how dangerous it is to have our initial just tentative relationship to unity, where we have to use our faith, our upward faith grasp. Remember how in item number one back there, they talk about federated, you know, like talk about, you know, that upward grasp, right? And that's very, very dangerous, just relating to unity reaching way, way above where you are. What if you start to take it on at eye level? Okay, now, at this point, you know, if you're, you know, you didn't make it to the constellations in the first place, if you could go rogue, right? That's in the rearview mirror, even if you're not fused yet. You know, you're not in actual danger of rejecting eternity, okay? But the point is, there's extreme disciplines, you know, and that's why they talk about the economy of Havona, the laws of the house of Havona, right? You know, and how that you have to have that perfection of purpose to get in. You know, you have to be able to perfectly disciplined. Okay? You're not complete yet, okay? But you have to be perfectly disciplined in order to get into Havona. Right? You know, it's going to require an ability to manipulate the self with our personality like we can't even imagine right now. Okay? So that's what's between the lines here, is that, you know, you're going to demonstrate to everyone on Audientia that you now have the willingness to submit yourself to the most intense disciplines ever. You know, and it's it only gets steeper and steeper. You know, we talked about that. You know, you think it's steep on the first five circuits of Havona, and then you get to the second circuit, and you go, no, there can't be things steeper than vertical. How can this be steeper than vertical, right? But remember what you're doing. You're basically, you thought you got to vertical, but that was just a finite point of view. It's like, wait till you bring in, you know, the absentite and the co-absolute, and right. So the disciplines are huge. Okay, that you have to be willing to submit to. Right? Okay, and it's going to be the thrill of this. You'll be at that point where the fact that you will be given clearance to submit to these higher levels will be a delight beyond your imagination, right? That's why it's called Audientia, right? The place of delight, right? What the word Eden means in Hebrew, right? The delight to do this, to submit the will, to consecrate the will at this level, all the way, to the goal, right? All right, and just the one little thing, just think about it's just a few words. Why didn't they just say, as it is depicted by the faithful of days, period? Why did they throw in the phrase, the noun phrase there, the first of the Supreme Trinity origin personalities they have met? Right? What are you starting to set your sights for? Right? Being a finaliter, and that consecration, right, to the Trinity. Right? That's who's telling the story. That whole bit of putting yourself in cooperative subordination to the Paradise Trinity, taking that finaliter oath to the Paradise Trinity, not to the Father, not to the Son, not to the Spirit. Right? It's not a Father origin being. It's not a Son origin being. It's not a Spirit origin being. It's a Trinity origin being that is getting you primed for this goal.
How likely is it that an ascending being would not have fused by the time they become citizens of Audientia after 70 of the satellites?
We don't really know. We know that those who go all the way to, in our case, Salvington, and haven't fused yet, that's a really tiny number, a really low percentage. But how many fuse on the 490 worlds? I don't know. Right? But obviously it's getting a smaller and smaller number all the time. But again, that whole bit about, there's no real danger of going to oblivion. We proved that during the Lucifer Rebellion. There wasn't a single ascender on Gerasim that joined the rebellion, whether they refused or not. I mean, obviously the ones that refused wouldn't, but not even the ones that hadn't fused and were on Gerasim joined. they're rock solid already. Because they've completed the unification of the evolving mortal personality. And as long as you have the catalyst for your personality encompassment, you know, the adjuster is there catalyzing that completed self being definitively encompassed by your personality, it's fine. You take the adjuster away and you can lose your personality grip, like, you know, some of the prince's staff did. Okay, they can let go of that nice solid personality encompassment and that self can go rogue again. But, you know, you're rock solid even if you haven't fused all the way up from Gerasim on.
They didn't have
their adjuster,
right? What was that? They hadn't fused, but they had...
Right, I mean, none of the prince's staff had fused, right? You know, because they had all the adjusters are taken away. Right, remember?
They came here without adjusters.
All 100 of them came here without adjusters. And remember why that is, because they're going to function for a while on a stationary level. So they can't have that spirit fragment in them because spirit gravity is pulling you up if you've got that spirit fragment in them. You know, they can't be ascenders for a while. They need to be functioning state. So you have to take the adjuster out so that they can function like a seraphim, say, you know, as a
they
horizontal.
Just picked the wrong prince.
Well, it may turn out that those who were born on planets of rebellion are actually the most blessed, right? Right. Yeah. Right. They had the greatest of opportunities, and a bunch of them, you know, missed an opportunity that very few beings ever have, right? To do what Amadon did, right? Did Amadon not show up, Nod and crew? You know, basically the Homo erectus-like mortal, you know, stayed loyal. Nod and crew, you know. All of that work, think, you know, they got to Gerasim citizenship. They had completed the unification of the evolving mortal personality. They had this completed Marantia identity. And they let go of it.
Amadon or
Van and crew, Van and Nod and everyone. Not Amadon. Yeah. Right. I'm talking about Nod and the others that joined the rebellion. You know, they were one of these things we're talking about here. Right? Someone that had gone all the way through all the mansion worlds, you know, and was a Gerasim citizen. Right? Had it all completed and threw it all away. Because they fell victim to the sophistry. That it's not about the willingness to submit the self. They fell for the sophistry that it's all about the self. No submission.
Assertion.
Right, self-assertion. Right? They believed Lucifer's teachings that the reason that you have the powers of choice is to choose the self over all else. That's why that's what he was, and he convinced them, you know, angels and, you know, whatnot. That this is why you have the powers of choice. I mean, like I said, I mean, they can see the difference between a mind that's making a decision and a mind that's making a choice. They can literally measure the, you know, size of the decision forms and everything, you know, and they can see the different flavor of them. I mean, they know there's decision and choice. You know, but they believe that the reason that you have the power to do more than decide, but you can choose, is to choose those decision forms over all else, that those decision forms are innately divine and are worthy to be chosen. You know, what are you given the powers of choice to choose time and space? No, you're given the powers of choice to choose infinity and eternity. They chose the opposite, and they will get their wish eventually. Right? You know, what's the opposite of infinity? Well, that would be a point of zero volume. That's what they chose, and they'll get their wish. They will be a point of zero volume one day, right? As if they'd never been born. Zero volume, right? Okay.
The adjusters said their final goodbyes.
Right. Yeah, remember, you know, that's all hanging in limbo. The adjusters, all those adjusters are still hanging around waiting, you know, I mean, until the adjudication. Okay, back to the story here. All right, so... Right, so that's the main. Now, as we read through this, you know, it's just a few brief comments. See, look for what we were just talking about there. Look for this bit about unity, spirit, that you're making this new consecration of will towards. Okay, go ahead and read there, Dean.
The entire sojourn on the constellation training worlds, culminating in Nidentia's citizenship, is a period of true and heavenly bliss for the Marantia progressors. Throughout your sojourn on the system worlds, you were evolving from a near animal to a Marantia creature. You were more material than spiritual. On the Salvington spheres, you will be evolving from a Marantia being to the status of a true spirit. You will be more spiritual than material. But on Nidentia, ascenders are midway between their former and their future estates, midway in their passage from evolutionary animal to ascending spirit. During your whole stay on Nidentia and its worlds, you are, quote, as the angels. You are constantly progressing, but all the while maintaining a general and a typical Marantia status.
And I mean, probably a number of you know, I mean, the quote unquote, as the angels, you know, in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, in the Synoptic Gospels, you have that comment about, you know, from Jesus about not being married, you know, and when you go to heaven in the next life, and that's what they're pulling that from. And you know, as we've talked about, I mean, you know, you immediately have a Marantia of nature, which is moving into, you know, very much in parallel with all of the hierarchy of celestial beings that have that homogeneous blend of physical and spiritual energy, and you have this heterogeneous weave of the two, and you're going up parallel. You know, here they're just reminding you, you know, on the first mansion world, you're beginning to be quote-unquote as the angels, but, you know, the real heart of that whole local universe celestial nature is right there at the constellation level. You know, that's where you're very definitively as the angels, as the celestials of the local universe, that is. All right. You know, see, you know, you were constantly progressing, but like we were saying last time, there's a degree of horizontalness to that constellation level that isn't there in a lot of other places. Remember how they mentioned, you know, that you actually settle in for kind of a long period there. You know, you're not so much just passing through. You're ascending, but it isn't so straight line. It's more of a, you know, spiral going around and around. And you're ascending, yes, but there's an awful lot of horizontalness, so where you're fleshing out. I mean, that's always the case. This, you know, you penetrate to completion. You know, and you ascend to perfection. So when you're thinking about completing, you know, think about some measure of having to spread out horizontally, penetrating horizontally to completion. And so here you really, you know, you're reminded again of just how vast this completion step is. You have to literally start to not just think of, you know, a vertical climb that has a little, you know, quasi-plateau in it, you know, so it's a little bit horizontal. I mean, here, you know, you are really dwelling at that level and fleshing out a very big space horizontally before you start to strike, step upward again. All right.
I mean, we're at the Nidentia citizenship, so we become citizens, no more green cards.
Right.
We can hang for a bit.
True and heavenly bliss, that's what you need to look.
Darn right.
Yeah, and
find it on cable.
You know, and remember that, you know, even though you've been there, you know, it's only as a citizenship that you hear the story for the first time, you know, like they said. Right? So, it's always the case that when you're going, you know, when you're in Havona and you go to paradise, you know, before you're a resident there, or, you know, whenever you're going up to a headquarters-like place, you know, before you're a resident or citizen there, you have just a very limited relationship to what's going on there. You need to be complete in order to relate to what's there. You know, and as a part, you don't do it. So, you know, you will experience Adentia for the first time finally, too, when you're there. You'll have the wholeness to experience it. All right, let's see.
This is after having gone through the 490.
No, 770, remember. 770 worlds.
This is the ending before you're going
plus
on to the
before you're going on to the 490, yeah. Right. Okay. Right, the numbers are just, you know, mind-boggling, yes. Okay.
Right.
Right, yeah, compared to billion, it's nothing, right? All right.
Plus, the days are longer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And you're not mortal. So there's no, you're not trying to cram everything into 5 minutes, you know? Yeah.
This constellation sojourn of an ascending mortal is the most uniform and stabilized epoch in the entire career of Morantia progression. This experience constitutes the pre-spirit socialization training of the ascenders. It is analogous to the pre-finaliter spiritual experience of Havona and to the pre-absolute training pre-absonite training on paradise.
Okay, see, so there it is. This experience constitutes the pre-spirit. See, right, you're going up. You're going to now take on unity in a more direct fashion in the next stage. Right? So it's a pre-spirit socialization, and they're giving these analogies. You have the pre-finaliter spiritual experience of Havona. So you go, oh, that's why they made sure they threw in that, because remember what they said at the beginning. You know, your definitive spiritual growth doesn't start till you get in Havona. Everything is just spirit preparatory school, right? Because spirit in a direct sense, unity in a direct sense, can't be had in some downstepped domain. Even on Uversa, you're only in one of the seven downstepped expressions of unity. You know, the sevenfold individuation of spirit unity. Right? So, you have that full-on spiritual experience of Havona, and it's pre-finaliter. And so, again, you can think about how you're trying to complete something there. You know, so when you get to paradise, you can have this new consecration of your will. Okay? And then they say the pre-absonite training on paradise. Remember, there's some more training on paradise, right? And you're going to complete that training, and then there can be a new consecration of the will, you know, predicated on that completion. Why is that pre-absonite? It's like, wow, why, you know, isn't that like bringing in, I mean, I'm just a finaliter, why are you bringing in the absonite? Remember how I said how you're setting your sights ever farther and farther, right? So you're going to be setting your sights on, you know, becoming a seven-stage spirit and everyone transcending the finite, grand universe being settled in light and life. And it's like, well, okay, yes, but there has to be some reality to to pre-absonite training. Okay, so think about it. Right now you're in the finite. You're thinking about the absonite. There's a level in between, the supreme level. Right, the finite level, above that's the supreme level, above that's the absonite level. So in order to do pre-absonite training, you must be able to do that supreme level thing in some definitive way that you never could before. Right, on the Isle of Paradise, I mentioned this earlier, you have that first direct relationship to the supreme experiential level in the outer life. That first direct relationship to the supreme experiential level in the outer life. That's why it can be pre-absonite training. Right? No amount of relationship to the finite experiential level in the outer life can be pre-absonite. That would be pre-supreme. Right? So you have that first measure of direct relationship to the supreme experiential level in the outer life. And you need that for pre-absonite, and you need that to actually have this first holistic relationship to what's going on in the Isle of Paradise, because it's absolute there. You know? And in order to relate to absolute, you need to have supreme or ultimate. That's what directly connects to absolute. You know, the reality levels as opposed to the actuality levels of finite, absonite, co-absolute. You have that downstepped expression of the absolute, the supreme, that you are relating to. Okay?
So to me also, it's, you know, when the finaliters go out into the other universes that they haven't been through before.
Yep.
And like there's some even some on this world actually.
Mm-hmm.
And right. You know, they're out there maybe, as you say, gaining that that absonite experience, or who knows what they're doing. But they're working on something of that particular level.
Well, they're,
you know what I'm saying?
They're working on the rest of that pre-absonite training, right? And see, and remember how they, you know, I've used the expression, they remind you of that directly when they talk about your finaliter career. You ascended to perfection, okay, now you're a finaliter. Now what? Now the second half, the horizontal part. You're going to penetrate to completion. You have to establish a complete relationship with the finite. And that's going to take a long time.
Yeah,
right. Yeah, and it's a very collective process. Yes, like you're saying. Right. So you're penetrating to see again. It's always a completion step. You initiate this whole, you know, new process of going through a long completion stage. Okay. All right. So that. Okay. Oh, someone's here. Okay.
Winston has a question.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Chris, what about on Earth? What is pre-Marantia training involved in?
I mean, like I mentioned here on Earth, I mean, you want to just very humbly be trying to supply favorable conditions for your Marantia self, your soul, to be getting started in a very, you know, immature way. Don't try to do great things. It's not possible here. I mean, just try to be humble and patient, and that will supply the favorable conditions to get yourself going, to give it, that soul an environment to be, you know, that it's nurtured in and grows. You know, if you start to make some progress here and you start to get to the point where you can more take on a more direct, active relationship with the universal harmony, okay, that's just going to, you know, begin to accelerate the process of your soul's growth, okay? But, I mean, the only thing that's definitively required is to get started. You know, and especially because we have such short lives, a lack of biologic uplift, you know, and we have so few helpers, you know, no visible ones, you know, they don't expect us to be doing any great things, you know. So that's why I said, I mean, be very humble about it. You don't need to be trying to consecrate your will a whole bunch here. I mean, that's actually pretty dangerous to get too much in that mode of thinking it's all about some sort of a transcendent exercise of your will. You know, how likely is it that you're going to will some holistic thing? You know, in our immature ignorance, you're probably going to will something that shouldn't be willed yet. So it's best to just kind of be humble about that whole will thing.
Be grounded.
Right? You know, when you aren't humble about that will thing, when you start to falsely exercise that will with this incomplete self, that's what manifests as a phenomenon called pride. A prideful self is a self that's being willed when it shouldn't be willed yet. Right?
It reminds me of the part where Jesus said that when we came down from the mountain, he said what he was going to do was going to go down and quietly start preaching or talking about the gospel and let his thought adjuster, let the Father, and then it says his thought adjuster, work out the details day by day.
Mm-hmm.
So in a way, that's sort of an example of what you were saying.
Right. He does the consecration, and then just goes with the process very humbly. Right? He isn't in this intense, I'm trying to will every moment. You know, I want everything I do to be like perfectly in relationship to eternity. I mean, you're just going to blow yourself up if you're thinking like that. Right? Just be very humble and patient, and go about your day-to-day life. Let it grow naturally. All right. Right. So you can see, just like I was saying, just get the back in, into it here. You know, that spiritual experience of Avona, the pre-spirit of socialization, that's the next stage. Okay.
Ascending mortals on Edentia are chiefly occupied with the assignments on the 70 progressive Univitatia worlds. They also serve in varied capacities on Edentia itself, mainly in conjunction with the Constellation program concerned with group, racial, national, and planetary welfare. The Most Highs are not so much engaged in fostering individual advancement on the inhabited worlds. They rule in the kingdoms of men rather than in the hearts of individuals.
Okay, so, you know, see another big paragraph break. So, you know, they basically have that whole bit about the consecration dealt with. Now, what other issues are in play? Like we mentioned last time, I think it was actually when we were talking about that paragraph I went back to in the previous section, you know, when they were talking about Gerasim citizenship, citizenship and such things, we got off on a lengthy discussion. And that whole issue of going back and you know, serving as tutor for those who are coming up, and I mentioned how they don't talk about that directly in all this discussion in the previous section, but see, they're referencing it here, right? When you're an Edentia citizen, you're one of those that are going back to the 770 worlds and helping mentor those that are coming up behind you, right? See, so they mention that. And then there's the eye level thing. Just like you had the eye level thing with the system sovereign, you know, and you were trying to achieve the willingness to submit the self to the disciplines of group activities and coordinated undertakings, and so was the system sovereign, and so always is the system sovereign. You now are at the eye level with the Most Highs. And you're going to be doing what they're up to, right? And what are they up to? Are they up to affairs of individuals? No. The Most Highs are not so much engaged in fostering individual advancement on the inhabited worlds. They rule in the kingdoms of men rather than in the hearts of individuals. So that whole bit of having the objectivity now to work hand in hand with the Most Highs, helping them make those decisions that are, you know, for the greatest good, for the greatest number of people, for the greatest length of time, and that may mean some individuals are going to die for the greater good. What was that?
Are these mostly planetary, or you think?
Yeah, all of these planetary issues. You're going to be working with them side by side. They're going to say, John, I want you to handle that situation on planet number 584.
Oh, me?
Yeah. And you'll say, yes, sir.
you betcha.
And they'll say, remember, you don't have to kill everyone. You know, you don't have to always do, oh, just kill them all and let God sort it out. all right. But, you know, like we've mentioned so many times, see, you will have, you know, think about it, you'll have that kind of objectivity. And how do you have that kind of objectivity? Because you have real socialization, and you are now striking your sights towards unity. You have the requisite relationship to unity and associativity where you can begin to help make these decisions that are for the whole on a planet, and not necessarily for any individual. Most likely, you know, there's going to be some set of individuals that it's not going to go well for in order for the greater good to be achieved, right? You know, those kind of decisions are going to be, you know, in your hands. You know, if you're still, you know, if you had any shades of that delight in self-assertion, right? Would you be given that? You know, if you had anything, oh, well, you know, that poor person, you know, if you're still, I mean, you know, think about it. We actually struggle with this. We have an expression that's kind of used sarcastically that has the word, you notice how they said, rather than in the hearts of individuals. What's that expression?
Bleeding.
A bleeding heart. Notice how they're playing on that. Can you be objective enough to not fall into that simple-minded bleeding heart mode? See, they purposely said that heart. You know, they could have just said, rather than, you know, regarding individuals, right? Right. I mean, see, you know, think about that. I mean, it's not like the ancients of days reject mercy, are in, you know, contradiction to mercy. No, they're in perfect synchrony with mercy. And yet, right, they're objective. Right? I mean, why do we use that derisive expression of bleeding heart? Because we know the person is not being objective. It's not that they don't have a positive desire or wish, right? But it's like they're not being objective about it. You know, you can't just be totally subjective with your spiritual consciousness. You need to be all the more objective if you're going to start to exercise your spiritual consciousness. And you're going to have that requisite objectivity up there to make those really tough decisions about the rule in the kingdoms of men. Okay.
And on that day when you are prepared to leave Adentia for the Salvington career, you will pause and look back on one of the most beautiful and most refreshing of all your epochs of training this side of paradise, but the glory of it all augments as you ascend inward and achieve increased capacity for enlarged appreciation of divine meanings and spiritual values. Sponsored by Malavasya Melchizedek.
Mm-hmm. And we already talked about, you know, like I said, you could even pronounce it Malavatiya to stress the etymology of it. Remember, if you wanted to. So, you know, they just end with that little flourish that you're finally going to take a deep breath and turn your back on the delight that is the consolation level and set yourself for higher things. And you're going, oh, I don't want to turn my back on the delight. The gardens are magnificent. It's a whole hemisphere, you know, you're thinking to yourself. It's just amazing. An entire hemisphere of a world that's the size of our sun, you know, is a garden.
It's just one more weekend.
Right?
They say the same thing about when you leave alone.
Right. You know, they always say that, you know. But, you know, see, you'll pause and look back on one of the most beautiful and most refreshing of all your epics of training this side of paradise, but... Right, and you know, why are they? It's like, well, I'm a long ways from that. I mean, why are they giving me this? You know, there's a downstepped expression of this. You have to make transitions in your life here, right? And you always have convinced yourself beforehand that where you're going next could never be as good as where you are now. And God always has a surprise for you. Specifically, God the Supreme, always has a surprise for you. It's always better as you continue to progress.
Just take courage, right?
Just take a deep breath and go for it. But the glory of it all augments. You know, it always augments. If you're on a path in relationship with the cosmos, the experiences always augment. They can't do anything else. What's the experiential deity? The Supreme. Does it go in fits and starts? Does it back up sometimes? No, it's methodically and monotonically progressing, forward moving, right? It's always, the Supreme is always going to take you to ever greater vistas. Now, know that now, not just then. You can know that now just as definitively as you'll know it then. Even though you don't have anywhere near the vast mind that you'll have then, you have the exact same personality now that you'll have then, the same ability to see that which can't be seen, right? To know that which you haven't experienced, Use your personality. It's the animal that's convinced that the comfortable place it's in can never be duplicated, never be exceeded. The personality knows otherwise, right? And it knows all the more the higher you go. So take that on. Courageous and independent cosmic thinking. Use your personality. Don't be afraid of what's on the other side of the hill. Right?
Don't. Buzz Lightyear can do
it. To infinity and beyond. Right? You know, when I use that, I'm not on the other side, afraid of what's on the other side of the hill. Don't fall back. You know, by and large, we have Northern European roots, you know, or at least European roots, and that's just kind of the classic thing, you know, in Europe, where you have all these people living in this little village, and they've, you know, back in, you know, in ancient times, and they'd never been over to the little hill to the village next door, you know, because it was too scary, you know, to go beyond the Shire, right? I mean, why is that part of, you know, Tolkien, you know, right? The Shire is that little village European mentality that's part of your consciousness, okay? You can't be like a hobbit, right? You need to be that robust human that gets on the horse and rides for the horizon, right? That mythology is harkening back to the difference between the Sangiks and the Andites. You need to be an Andite, not a Sangik, right? All right. So there you have it. Now we may not even want to try to get through this first section. It's a great big huge section.
Grief.
Yeah, it's a gigantic. The preface is huge here. But let's work our way into it as far as we can. So now, I mean, it seems like we're gonna take a detour here from where we've been, but. They'll remind you of why this paper is the companion to this to paper 43 that we just finished, as we get into it here. So let's just—we don't need to preface it any. Let's just jump in and start reading. So let's get into paper 44 here.
Paper 44: The Celestial Artisans. Among the courtesy colonies of the various divisional and universe headquarters worlds may be found the unique order of composite personalities denominated the Celestial Artisans. These beings are the master artists and artisans of the Marantia and lower spirit realms. They are the spirits and semi-spirits who are engaged in Marantia embellishment and in spiritual beautification. Such artisans are distributed throughout the grand universe, on the headquarters worlds of the super universes, the local universes, the constellations and systems, as well as on all spheres settled in light and life. But their chief realm of activity is in the constellations, and especially on the 770 worlds surrounding each headquarters sphere.
Read that in a little paragraph,
too. Through their work may be almost, though their work may be almost incomprehensible to the material mind, it should be understood that the Marantia and spirit worlds are not without their high arts and supernal cultures.
Okay, so big paragraph break. There's our little beginning thought. Notice how it ends with a pair of things: high arts and supernal cultures. Okay, which is why up there in his, what is that, the second sentence, you know, where it says, these beings are the master artists and artisans. So the celestial artisans, they're using the word artisan in a general sense. But, you know, right away there, they're using the word artisan in a specific sense to contrast it with artists. You know, so that you can think about on the, you know, how we, you know, use that contrast, where we'll use artisan as a specific term rather than kind of just etymologically. It's a general term, okay? But we use it, you know, to differentiate from the way we use the word artists, because, you know, artisans basically means craftsmen, you know, in contrast to just saying artists. You know, so on the one hand, you have supernal cultures, and the artisans that it, that you know are required for a supernal culture. Okay, so just all the craftsmen of a culture. And then there's, you know, more just directly, you know, and we might say more abstractly, art. You know, high arts, and the artists, you know, that produce that high art. You know.
Wouldn't the artisans be something like the Sporneggia?
You know, there's the Sporneggia, I mean, are certainly working with, you know, the artisans, yes. But they're not celestial artisans, right? Because, what you know, what's the main reason why they're not going to be celestial artisans? They're not personalities, right? They're animals, right? Right. To be an artist, you have to be a person, okay? We have things in the so-called modern and postmodern ages, the 20th century into the 21st century, that are called art, but aren't, obviously, right? Because it isn't the modern and the postmodern ages, actually. It's you know, modernism is actually primitivism, postmodernism is actually pre-primitivism, okay? So especially when you get to pre-primitivism, there's really not much personality manifestation going on. It's just fancy animal stuff. And a lot of times it's not even fancy animal stuff. It's just animal stuff, right? It's so pre-primitive, right? Remember, primitive is a human term. You have primitive humans, right? So to be pre-primitive is to be animal-like, dominated by, you know, so that's why you have all of this so-called art.
They don't think of it that way.
Right, they don't think of it that way. You know, they also believe in terms like absolute relativism. Okay? You know, just ponder that one for a second as a human. Right, again, so, you know, remember that up front. I mean, you know, you're talking about an opportunity for a personality to manifest. One of the outlets of genuine personality expression. Right? You know, the courtesy colony on all the different levels that are called the celestial artisans. Right? That's the whole point of you know, ascending is, like we were just talking about, having more and more opportunity to manifest a personalized self as opposed to just self, especially in our case, just an animal origin self, or like they were saying in the early Marantia worlds, near animal, you know, remember they used that expression, self. Right? It's because it's not very personal yet on those early mansion worlds. Now, so even though you've got a Marantia body and everything, it still is a limit to how much personality can manifest yet. It's still near animal. Okay. So the higher you go, the more that personality can manifest, the more glorious the manifestation of artisans and artists can be. Okay. So that's what we're talking about, the opportunity to do this. To be personal on a, you know, in this particular mode of expression. All right, let's see. Anything else in there? Well, you notice they're master artists and artisans too, right? So, you're striving for that perfection of expression, as we'll see in a moment here. Let's see. Okay, yeah, and then right, the one other little thing in there, like I mentioned, it's like, why is paper 44 attached to paper 43? Because like they said, that even though they're at all levels, their chief realm of activity is in the constellations, and especially on the 770 worlds surrounding each headquarters sphere. So part of that whole socialization process is going to be, you know, catalyzed by this immersion in ever more transcendent art. Remember what they say about what you're trying to do as a mortal with art. You're trying to get the person who views your art to at least superconsciously strike step with the Marantia. Right? To be reaching up towards the Marantia.
So spirits and semi-spirits, does that mean there's, you have to be a spiritual being to be, you have to reach that state of spirituality?
I mean, as a, no, as a Marantia being, I'm, you know, I've got spirit energy and physical energy. I'm semi, you know, if you literally think of it as two fibers going like this, half the fibers are physical and half are spiritual, semi, right, half, see, right. Yep, so, so that's what's going on is you're being catalyzed by the contemplation of beauty. And the simplest way to think about how that helps to be an initiating process for you, you're maturing in relationship to truth, truth that's related to fact. You know, like that personal living philosophy in the upper domain of your hourglass, that's the domain of your relationship to truth. They're the truths of eternity, but there's two types of eternity. There's experiential eternity, which is a long ways away yet in experience, but there's existential eternity, which you can access right now. To initiate your relationship with experiential eternity, you're catalyzed by a relationship to existential eternity. So remember the threefolds, you know, like if you look on, you know, on the threefold actuality with unity chart. There's, you know, here in field number two, you have fact, truth, goodness. But in field number seven, you have beauty, truth, goodness. Okay? Talking about beauty here. Right? That truth that's a super additive consequence of a relationship between beauty and goodness, that's the truths of existential eternity. You get that by relating to beauty. Okay? So it gets you primed in relationship to truth. Then you've got the very difficult process of getting relationship to the truths of experiential eternity, the truths that are connected to facts. Okay? And you notice there's goodness in both of them. The super additive consequence of the relationship between fact and goodness is truth again. Okay? But it's a different kind of goodness. Right? The goodness that's there with fact is perfectingness. That's goodness in, related to time. The goodness that you're relating to beauty is perfectness, not perfectingness. Right? It's an existential triplet, right, rather than an experiential triplet. Right? So that's why this is here. You have a great challenge, the kind of truth that you have to strike with to relate to all of these facts, all the facts of the socialization like we were talking about. That's a huge challenge. You're going to need lots of catalysts. You do that by sparking the process, by getting relationship to the truths of existential eternity more, by relating to beauty, you know, and your ability to, you know, to consciousize perfectness. You know, we know we can do that at a very immature stage right here. That's one of our big problems, is getting way ahead of ourselves and thinking that our visualization of perfectness can just be manifested in the, you know, in the outer life. Right? It's not meant to be manifested in the outer life. That perfectness that you can visualize is meant to catalyze your inner life. Right? It's meant for spiritual idealism in the inner life, not some false material idealism in the outer life. You know, and the fact that that false material idealism is destroying civilization so aggressively right now that they had to send an emergency revelation to try to help with the issue. Okay. But we don't, you know, we're clear up at the constellation level. We don't have that problematic issue. So they're not worried about you having even more problematic relationship to existential, right? They're priming it, okay? Beauty, 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 and you know, and the idealism is just firing on all cylinders in your mind, getting you sparked and going to face the rigors of facts. Yep.
I would think it would also be not only invigorating but extremely restful. I know beauty
yeah.
is soothing.
Yeah, exactly. That. For those on the webinar, you're saying it would be extremely restful too, wouldn't it? And the answer is yes, definitely. I mean, begin to understand you know, what the purpose is of having so much ability right now to have a relationship to the existential. So that there can be inner peace. In the midst of ever-growing complexity in the outer life. But don't make this, you know, this delusional step of trying to, you know, take that sense of inner peace and, you know, try to impose it on the outer life by fiat, by some, you know, regulatory exercise or some, you know, legislative exercise or something. I mean, you know, that's just totally false. Right? It's meant for the, you know, that peace that passes all understanding, right? Truth, beauty, and goodness. It's an inner life thing, a spiritual thing. Keep the material and the spiritual separate. All right, so that's that's what this is about. But I, you know, if you had never paused to think about that, that, you know, just right there, they're using artisan in two different ways. You know, in the title, they're using it in a general way, and then they use it in a kind of the typical specific way right away too. So, you know, like I said, that's always the case. You know, the word spirit is used in specific and general. You know, you got to stay, you know, in tune with what's going on to know how to properly interpret it. Okay, and it's just, it's always changing from sentence to sentence. You've got to be dynamically shifting your understanding to what's going on in that sentence so you don't misinterpret it. All right.
The celestial artisans are not created as such. They are a selected and recruited core of beings composed of certain teacher personalities native to the central universe and their volunteer pupils drawn from the ascending mortals and numerous other celestial groups. The original teaching core of these artisans was sometime assigned by the Infinite Spirit in collaboration with the seven master spirits and consisted of 7,000 Havona instructors, 1,000 to each of the seven divisions of artisans. With such a nucleus to start with, there has developed through the ages this brilliant body of skillful workers in spirit and Marantia affairs.
Right, so kind of right at the end there, you can see about Marantia affairs, you know, and the semi-spirit. And right, so, you know, so to think about that, you know, that they're, you know, they're working with a Marantia, but they're not starting bottom up with the Marantia, the physical to the spiritual. They're working top down. Right? So their fundamental, you know, point of contact with their artistry is spirit substance. Right? Where is the domain when you genuinely, definitively start your spiritual ascension? Havona. Where are the original artisans from? Havona. I see. Everything is always logical. Right? You know, take the time to recognize how tight it always is, how everything fits together like that. Right? How perfectly this is all set up. Okay, and we mentioned this way back when we were reading about Havona. You know, that you've got all these beings that they don't disclose at all, you know, in Havona. But indirectly, you know, we know that there's certain types of beings that the Infinite Spirit and the Master Spirits have going to prime the pump on the celestial artisans. And talk about mustard seeds. I mean, you know, think about the domain. We were talking about the seven super universes, eventually 7 trillion inhabited planets, and that whole process in terms of artistry is initiated by merely 7,000 Havona natives. That is a real mustard seed, you know, in comparison. And it's not 1,000 for each either, you notice. I mean, it's not, you know, it's 7 for the whole, you know, grand universe. The sevenfoldness is the list of 7 that we're going to get to here in a little bit, not the sevenfoldness of the 7 super universes. And why does that make sense? Okay, what's the sevenfoldness of the 7 super universes? We just said it a little bit ago. That's the sevenfold individuation of spirit unity. Right? We don't want the individuation of spirit unity. We want the spirit unity directly from the central universe. That's what they're attempting to bring out. So, see, their efforts are fundamentally transcendent of the differentiation of the seven superuniverses. They're an influence in the superuniverses that's trying to get you primed towards your transcending of that superuniverse. The subset of unity that's in that superuniverse, even at a very low level, they're already trying to get you primed towards what transcends the superuniverse.
So 7,000 of them could spread out into any of the
superuniverses, and
they maybe move between them.
Right, and we don't know exactly how it is that they, if they initially spread evenly or what. I mean, we don't know. But they don't explain. But some way or another, those 7,000 were just used to prime the pump all over. And you have to imagine, initially, they're probably running between the superuniverses, right? To get it all started. Yeah. Busy people, I'm sure, in the early days. All right, let's keep going.
Any Marantia personality or spirit entity is eligible for admission to the core of the celestial artisans. That is, any being below the rank of inherent divine sonship. Ascending sons of God from the evolutionary spheres may, after their arrival on the Marantia worlds, apply for admission to the artisan core and, if sufficiently gifted, may choose such a career for a longer or shorter period. But one may enlist with the celestial artisans for less than one millennium. But no one may enlist with the celestial artisans for less than one millennium, 1,000 years of super universe time.
Okay, I asked this question a while back. I think it was John that answered it. Do you remember what the ratio is for super universe time to our years?
It's 100. No, it's more than that.
No. Remember, it's 8 years and a little bit more. One super universe year is eight and one fifth. Yeah, you remember it as a fraction. Yeah, it's 8 1/5. I tell you that back earlier in the book. Right, so you've got 8,200 of our years. Okay?
One more time, how much?
8,200 years of our time is the minimum stint that you can serve. No one may enlist for less than that length of time.
If they have the talent.
Right, and of course, if, right. Like they said. I'll tell you really quick where it is. It's let's see. If you go back to it's on page 174, which is what is that? Paper 15, right? Isn't it? Paper 15, section 7, paragraph 2. 8 1/5 of your years.
Just going to say that.
Where does the talent come from? Does it come? Is it inherent in our DNA? Or
yes, I mean basically. Yeah, I mean it literally can be our material DNA here. We'll get to that at the end of the paper. But remember, you're just taking that upward. You have this ascending self. The personalities aren't, there aren't certain personalities that are artistic personalities. There are certain selves that are artistic selves. Right? Any personality, theoretically, could personalize an artistic self. Right? So, that's the differentiation, if you're going to become a star student or whatever. I mean, that's all about, the self, not the personality. Right? You have that self that has a certain flavor to it. And on top of that is some unique influence from eternity that is your personality.
Mm-hmm. Well, I had a friend, Bob Venosa, maybe you knew him as an artist here. This was one of his goals, was to... at some point, mm-hmm. become a celestial You know, whereas I can't draw for beans, so it's something I'm not even looking at, personally. But then again, what you were saying is, you know, maybe just because I can't draw here doesn't mean
right.
I can't be an artist of some other kind. It isn't always just...
Right. Who knows what you're, you know, when you finally have a self, you know, that's up at the minor sector level or the major sector level, I mean, who knows what that self is going to be like, you know? Okay. But,
you won't have that animalistic, I can't.
Right.
I can't.
So, you know, but there are cases where, you know, it starts very definitively, you know, even on the initial sphere.
Which is interesting, what we were talking about earlier, you know, as you look at the goals for your universe career, you know, as we were talking, you know, looking way ahead, this is one of those things to look forward to.
Yeah.
Like we were mentioning
here. Yeah.
Even much further, but still.
Yeah. You know, and it may be the case that all you have now is a deep yearning, but you can't, you know, exercise that. That deep yearning, you know, may be the little seed of potential that'll finally blossom, you know, on some world on high.
But you know it's there.
And you'll manifest as a profound artist. Okay.
Along with your friends, the Univitatia.
Right? You remember how they mentioned this before, the Univitatia help out a lot. Okay. And you know, we just were emphasizing the spirit in relationship to the artisans and the Univitatia's relationship to spirit like we talked about. You know, see the connection? Okay, meanwhile, back to the content here. So, you know, you've got, and you notice how they even, you know, they said Marantia personality, but they said spirit entity. You're going, well, wait a minute. I mean, is it literally non-personal spirit entities? As you keep reading, is eligible for the admission to the core of the celestial artings, that is, any being... Oh, okay. No, they qualified it there. So why did they do that? Why didn't they say spirit being? Okay, again, just what I was saying. What's the key thing here? It's the spirit. You know, your definitive relationship to spirit, and you're trying to, you know, express that artistically. Okay, just the fact that a spirit being is a spirit entity gets you that. Okay. But, you know, if you're a Marantia entity, you've got a lot of physical energy, you know, very immediately there, as well as the spirit energy. You're going to need the, you know, so they're emphasizing the definitiveness of the personality, you know, which is spirit pattern, you know, relating to that spirit. See, so the little things like that they're doing just to remind you, you know, of the details. Spirit is pretty immediate. You know, to a spirit entity, a spirit being, you know, that has a body, you know, that is very spirit and substance and nature. Okay, let's see here, what else do we have there? Right, so, after their arrival on the Marantia worlds there, you see, you know, ascending suns, you know, so, you know, it could be at a very low level. It doesn't have to be way high. Let's see, what else do we have there? You apply for admission, and if sufficiently gifted, you know, and there's always that, well, that you know, you feel a fear. It's like, well, what if I'm found not worthy? Well, you know, you may not be on the first mansion world or the second mansion world, or the, you know, but maybe you will be sufficiently gifted on Gerasim.
I can't carry it.
Right, just... Be patient with it. Don't be afraid of such statements. Okay. All right. So that's a little basics of them. Let's see what else we got here.
All celestial artisans are registered on the Super Universe headquarters, but are directed by Marantia supervisors on the local universe capitals. They are commissioned in the following 7 major divisions of activity by the central core of Marantia supervisors functioning on the headquarters world of each local universe. 1. Celestial musicians. 2. Heavenly reproducers. 3. Divine builders. 4. Thought recorders. 5. Energy manipulators. 6, designers and embellishers. 7, harmony workers.
Okay, and we'll get into, as everyone knows who's familiar with this paper, we'll get into the specifics of each of those when we get into the subsequent sections. But you have these 7 categories. So those are the 7 categories they were referring to up above, that those initial Avona natives were natural, one was a naturally, category number 1, some were naturally category number 2, et cetera. And out they go to prime the pump in those 7 areas. And, just notice they keep throwing in all these little details. So, the direct linkage between the central universe and outside the central universe is between the Eternals of Days in the central universe and the Ancients of Days in the super universe headquarters. Those are the, we talked about that way back when we were talking about the of days. They're very much companions, reciprocal beings on the two sides of the boundary between the central universe and the outside. All right, so the Eternals of Days are handing them out to the Ancients of Days, and that's where they're registered. See, is at the super universe headquarters. But they're directed by these Marantia supervisors. Again, they don't explain, exactly who they are or anything, but they just give you that expression for them. But the fact that they call them Marantia supervisors rather than spiritual supervisors, is definitely pointing to what they said up front, in that first paragraph about their chief realm of activity is in the constellations, and what they said in the previous paper about how the constellation is a definitive Marantia level. Okay, see, so they're just using a consistent terminology here. Okay.
So I misunderstood what you talked about for a second ago.
Yep.
The Eternals of Days handing them off to the Ancients of Days.
Yep.
But they don't come from the Marantia.
Yeah, the original ones.
But is this talking about?
No. I'm just harking back to that original thing of, of those original ones from that were Havona natives, are very logically being registered. Way back when. And so registration, see, gets set up at the super universe headquarters level. Oh. Okay, and then everyone, subsequent is registered there. Even if they're you on the first mansion world, becoming a celestial artisan, you're going to get registered on Uversa as a celestial artisan. And I was just trying to get you to understand why that's the base point. That's why that's the headquarters point. It's because of that. How this is getting started by Havona natives coming out. Okay. All right. Let's keep going here.
The original teachers of these 7 groups all hailed from the perfect worlds of Havona, and Havona contains the patterns, the pattern studies, for all phases and forms of spirit artistry. While it is a gigantic task to undertake to transfer these arts of Havona to the worlds of space, the celestial artisans have improved in technique and execution from age to age. As in all other phases of the ascending career, those who are most advanced in any line of endeavor are required constantly to impart their superior knowledge and skill to their less favored fellows.
Okay, so teacher-student relationship that we've already talked about. Okay, so think about this. You can call the central universe the pattern universe. Okay, so they're referring to that. The original teachers of these 7 groups all hailed from the perfect worlds of Havona. Right, we were just talking about the relationship between beauty and goodness, where goodness is perfectness. Right, see the perfect worlds of Havona. Right, so they're priming that super additive consequence of relationship to the truths of existential eternity. Reminding you of that. And Havona contains the patterns. Now, why did they throw in that parenthetical? Why did they say, well, to be more precise, the pattern studies? Why that clarification, that, greater specificity? You don't have any ideas?
Is that can be altered, maybe, or embellished, or reinterpreted?
They definitely, that's the idea, that they're going to be, there's going to be a modification of sorts from what's directly in Havona to what's going to go on out here. Why exactly? Why is there a modification that's going to occur?
It's not perfect here.
Well, it's not perfect, yes, but...
Because of the seven...
It starts right with the basic sevenfold individuation, right? You know, the pattern directly is not... there isn't the seven patterns in the central universe. There's the one pattern, right? Of spirit unity. So, at the very least, you've got to be thinking about, downstepping that pattern to a particular super universe. It's like, well, but it's a pattern. I mean, should I really think about downstepping a pattern? I mean, aren't I taking the actuality of spirit substance and I'm trying to purpose it? Isn't that what pattern is? Is the purposing of that spirit? I mean, isn't that, I'm striking towards a transcendent goal with that purposing? I mean, is that appropriate to think of downstepping? It doesn't seem, no. See, there's pattern studies. You don't have the spirit of the central universe. If you're in the seventh super universe, you have the spirit of the seventh super universe, and that's all you have, the only clay that you have. Right. So you study the pattern of the singular in the central universe, and then you use your creativity to try to take the clay that you've got, as lumpen as it is relative to what's in the central universe, and purpose it towards the central universe pattern. Right. You study that pattern. Right? You're trying to do that fundamental artistic thing of trying to make it a fundamentally transcending phenomenon. It's supposed to foster, motivate transcendence of the immediate. You've heard me tell the story before when I was a little kid. I did my first little painting.
Is that true?
Yeah. Yes, Mom knows this. Dad got into painting, and I was really interested. And so he got me some water, just little kids' watercolors paints. And he cut a little chunk of I think it was like quarter inch, plywood. And sanded the edges and stuff so I wouldn't get splinters and stuff. So I'd have something to paint, so I wouldn't be painting the walls and whatnot, right? Okay. And so I spent the whole day, working on this, on this board and painting it. And Dad came home and saw what I had done. Oh, that's really, really cool, Chris. What is it? Because it was kind of just some, random colors blobbed on the board. And I looked at him incredulously and said, "It's paint on wood." Wow, I mean, you're really dense, Dad. Isn't it obvious? It's paint on wood. Right. How old was I? Not very old. I was like probably three.
Two and a half.
Two and a half or something, right. So, I mean, has my personality began to manifest yet? No. I was pre-six, okay? I haven't even begun to have some rudimentary notion of transcending the immediate. Somehow having a fact on that board that, fostered towards truth, the truths of eternity, or towards the material, towards the Marantia. I had no sense of transcendence. I was still down in just in the plane, in the factual plane, right? So I stated the fact. You know, I couldn't be an artist yet. I wasn't able to be, you know, function as a volitional being yet. Right? I could do paint on wood, and I could pound a hollow log with a bone. Right? Right, so, I bring up that simple example about myself just to, you know, remind you, see, of what they're trying to do on this very high level, trying to get what's in, you know, in front of you to not be just what's in front of you, to not be just a fact, to not be just a spirit fact. To us, spirit seems very transcendent. I mean, just a blob of it, you know, would send us into you know, vibrations, you know, if we could see it. Okay, but to them, it's just a blob of clay, you know, it's just spirit substance, it's nothing, okay? It's like dirt to them, okay? The key is, can they take that spirit substance and can they get truth to flow through it, through that fact? Can they get you, you know, when you observe it, to strike step towards eternity in your inner life, right? If they're an artist, they'll achieve that. If not, as they said here, if sufficiently gifted, right? You're not going to get this job if you can't get someone to be able to come into relationship with truth by looking at your fact. Right? It's not about communicating facts. It's about inspiring your relationship to truth. Okay? The truths of existential eternity.
So is that why sometimes, you know, when you go to the Met or something like that, and you're looking at a picture, somebody who knows what the picture is really saying tells you what's really going on there, and you have no idea. So there's sort of like there's a truth in that picture, that like a Picasso or something like that, that you don't, if you're dumb like me, you don't see it, you know. And then when somebody tells you what's really going on in something that's maybe abstract, there is a truth that's happening somewhere. So it's, you know what I'm saying?
Yes, I mean, you know, and just notice how, you know, the example you're bringing up, you know, we were kind of referring to that. If I have to explain it to you, you're not the problem. I'm the problem as the artist. Okay? And the very fact... I'm not sufficiently gifted. You have the natural abilities to recognize things. God gave you those abilities. I'm trying to do something that you have an innate reality response to. Okay, it's not something where I give you an explanation, which means I'm engaging your second adjutant and giving you, you know, a rationalization and stuff. That's not what it's about. You know, and it's very interesting, see, that you picked Picasso as an example. Okay? Picasso is where in the history of this evolution? The beginning of the 20th century, right? Primitivism. Right? I mean, you know, we aggrandize that, but, you know, think more objectively about this. You know, you had developing a higher art form, and then you had someone say, you know, no, we should take it backwards. We should break it down into its primitive elements or something like this, they would say. Right? Right. See, you know, like I said, that's not modernism, that's primitivism. Right? And just, you know, when you think about the things that were being talked about, the way they talked about them, you know, notice that they might even have used the word primitive, you know, like primitive elements or something like that, okay? Right, see, the very fact that you're going, you know, you're cocking your head like a confused dog, trying to figure out what it is, it's not, the person was not sufficiently gifted.
Or, well, you know, I don't know.
See, now they have...
I'm not sufficiently... Some people can figure it out.
Right, but I mean, say that, yeah. Right, you know, again,
it's a tricky one.
You're not trying to figure it out, okay?
In life.
Right? It
should just bring about a response.
It should bring about an awakening of the upper domain of the hourglass.
Right.
Figuring out only happens in the lower domain of the hourglass. If you have to go into the figuring out mode, they're forcing you down into the lower domain of your hourglass. Humans that are basically nothing but a lower domain of an hourglass with a tiny little upper are called primitive man. Primitivism. It's basically a lower domain of the hourglass phenomenon. That's primitivism. And if it's pre-primitivism, God help us, right? Okay. Now, technically what that is where you just, pull yourself down away from any relationship to the upper domain, no matter how tenuously it's populated, that upper domain, right? And you're just functioning down there on the first two levels of meaning. Pre-primitivism is the first two levels of meaning, plus the zeroth levels of fear, right? A lot of so-called art is just trying to get you to feel something on the second level of meaning. That's not art. Art is not about the second level of meaning. It's not about the level of feelings, of the feelings. True art is about the upper domain of the hourglass. Okay? Where you have a reality response, where you just know, you just recognize. Right? That's what true art is. I mean, we started to understand this in the 6th century BC with the awakening of philosophy and the Greek studying of aesthetics. And we tried to move that forward, but we, have lost our way. We went into primitivism and then pre-primitivism. Okay? Art, so-called art, in a pre-primitive mode, appeals to your animal mind. And that's why it starts to just, it descends into trying to just be blatantly dichotomous, politically, or something. It's all about, those animal feelings and trying to invoke an animal response in you. Like, oh, I hate this artist. How dare they, put a crucifix in urine, or something like that, right? It's all about pre-primitivism. Right? It's not art. Okay. All right. So, let's read that last little paragraph there, and that'll finish up perfectly here.
You will first begin to glimpse these transplanted arts of Avona on the mansion worlds. And their beauty and your appreciation of their beauty will heighten and brighten until you stand in the spirit halls of Salvington and behold the inspiring masterpieces of the supernal artists of the spirit realms.
Right, so you see them pointing to, getting up to that definitive unity level of the local universe headquarters, and you'll see that what happens as we pick up where we've left off here. Next time, how they're going to try to stress what I've already been stressing, that spirit is a substance. Okay? How did they start to do that right here in that last statement? Do you see something in there that is using the word spirit in a very literal way, as opposed maybe you could think about it metaphorically? Like spirit realms, that could be just,
masterpieces.
Spirit halls, right? Spirit is a substance. I have buildings made out of spirit substance. Okay? It isn't, this is a hall that makes me feel something. That's not a spirit hall. No, it's a spirit substance hall, okay? It's a building made out of spirit substance, right? Okay, the literalness of spirit substance. If you want to challenge yourself to be moving towards the celestial artisans, you need to stop thinking that spirit is about feelings. Okay? You need to think of it as a substance. And you're trying to get material substance, paint on wood, for instance, to somehow inspire that person to the literalness of spirit substance. Okay? Not just a feeling about paint colors. Yep.
The book tells us a lot about how material reality is energy that comes from very high to more basic and lower, slowed down. But it doesn't, I don't recall it saying a lot about where where spirit substance comes from. We learn about spirit beings, but
they just occasionally reference, you have a parallel pattern. You know, they'll remind you, talk about space potency, the beginnings of the physical. They talk about spirit potency. Right? Same thing. Yeah, and you go through, and there's stages of its manifestation. You have pure energy, you also have pure spirit, et cetera. You have all those stages. You have paradise energy, you have paradise spirit. You have transcendental energy, you have transcendental spirit, et cetera. You have a parallel actualization and realization of spirit substance. Yeah, and, just to wrap it up, this whole bit about that they're giving you kind of the poetic flourish there, heighten and brighten until you stand in the spirit halls, and how difficult it is to achieve that ascending experience, like they said in the previous paragraph. While it is a gigantic task to undertake to transfer these arts of Havona to the worlds of space, right? The celestial artisans have improved in technique and execution from age to age. See, it's an evolutionary process. With each passing millennium, of those artisans being artisans, the skill improves. And more, they're getting the lumpen clay out here to inspire towards Havona. And even those initial Havona natives that came out didn't succeed in that task as well as some ascending mortal is achieving right now. Okay, just because they came from a perfect domain doesn't mean they can come out here and strike step with perfecting this. Right? And so there's a lot of ascending mortals that have way transcended anything that one of those original 7,000 Havona natives achieved in getting something out here that hearkens definitively to what's in there.
Yeah.
Right? Never underestimate the nature of a superadditive consequence. Right? The experiential is a superadditive consequence predicated on the existential. The experiential is greater than the existential. That's why it's so unfortunate that so many beginning spiritually conscious people, they get the recognition of the existential and they think, that's it, I found it, that's the last word in testament. No, that's the beginning. That's what's trying to initiate you. Right? The Father is just the beginning. You need to go above the Father. Okay? The grand universe is above the central universe, not below it. Right? So sometimes you use the downstepped, okay? Other times you need to remind yourself, that it's a super additive consequence, not a sub additive consequence. Right? It's above, not below. The experiential is built upon the foundation of the existential.
Central and super.
Okay. Yep, central and super universe. So you just think about that, right? It's building. Starts in the central, builds up from there. Yeah.
Also, the improvement over the ages, the expression of these artisans coming in from Havana, I'm certain has something to do with the growth of the Supreme as well.
Right. Again, the ability for us to do a better job of manifesting Havana out here is because the Supreme is growing and we're all immersed in the Supreme. You know, and just one other thing about that patterns and the pattern studies, you know, in this challenge. You know, remember you have someone mentioned it earlier, I think it was you, John, you know, there's 1 billion Havana worlds. Right? How many local systems are there? Well, 7 billion total, right? 1 billion in each super universe. Right? Remember, you know, each local system, right? You take 7 local systems, 1 in each super universe. Those 7 local systems are predicated on 1 Havana world. You pick another 7 in each, you know, and they're predicated on another one of those Havana worlds. So there's that too. You know, there's this incredible kaleidoscopic thing that's going on. Because there are 1 billion Havana worlds, right? And 1 billion local systems in each super universe. So there's that complexity too that's going on with this. Right? It's, you know, all these celestial artisans are not just working, you know, with the pattern on 1 Havana world. Right? You know, in a given local system, you're working with 1 Havana world as it's your pattern study. And then at the constellation level, you're trying to take the super additive consequence of all the local systems in your constellation. Right? And then in the local universe, trying to take the super additive consequence of all the constellations. And then in a minor sector, you're trying to take the super additive consequence of all the local universes. And you get the point, right? You're trying to somehow build up in the hierarchy to that most transcendent expression of the pure unity of the central universe. To that whole super additive hierarchy. So you go, whoa, that's a lot of individuality and complexity. Oh, yeah. We were talking about how complex it was at the constellation level with our socialization, too. And see how they're related, how they're parallel. There's no end to this. You can just talk endlessly about noticing all these parallels, just how perfectly everything is synchronized like this. Always be looking for that. All right, so we'll pick up there next time and get a little bit more into the literalness of spirit substance. All right, let's take a moment here.